Hi there, and welcome to the Sports Fan TV Cricket Fan Show. My name's Steve, and I am the erstwhile cricket guy, and I'm joined, as I very often am, by my very good friend Tony. Good evening, Tony. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, Steve. Good evening, guys, and good evening, folks.
Yeah, it's good to be here. We normally record our shows every Thursday, but we thought we'd wait until the end of the first Ashes test between England and Australia. And just to see that, it felt like the right time to do it. So we've convened ourselves after the close of play on the last day, just to have a bit of a rundown through what happened in the first test and our view on that, and indeed our view on what's going to happen going into the second test. And let me tell you, there's an awful lot to talk about, particularly from an England perspective. From an Australian perspective, I guess the message going into the match was the plan worked, stick to it to the next test and we'll probably be okay to win the series quite comfortably. But for England, from the very first action of the test, Tony, Joe Root won a toss that was good to lose. Well, but he chose to bat.
Let's go back even before that, to what happened before the first test, the preparation, the readiness, the fitness. I just give you a little quote that I heard in one of the interviews, that we went walking in Brisbane to get miles in our legs to simulate fielding for a day. I mean, you know, really, we're getting beyond all, aren't we?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was very noticeable. I think, you know, we'll go through the England's batting and England's bowling. But one of the things I found very hard to believe on the kind of second day of the test or some such, maybe the third day, the commentators were talking about the fatigue of England's bowlers in a way that you normally get kind of maybe day five of the fourth test of a series. Yes. You know that, or you know that they'll be aching, their muscles will be burning. You think after one day in the field, I mean, I know every day in the field is tiring, but
we got a young 27-year-old fit Robinson who admittedly did a good bit of bowling but not excessive, cramping up at the end of the day, and that tells me that whoever the fitness trainer and whatever the fitness regime was, you can have all your net bowling and all your fielding practice, but nothing replaces experience of playing in the match and being in the field as well as bowling. Yep. You can bowl all day in the nets, but you're not fielding as well. People forget
that's
that.
That's right. That's right. And also, of course, I guess Robinson is pretty inexperienced in Australian conditions and the kind of heat you get in Brisbane. And perhaps he didn't load up enough with liquids.
He's done a tour there with the Lions before, right. Mm-hmm. a very successful one too, I may add.
Right. Maybe it's one of those things, but I was really surprised at how much they were labouring, how tiring it was for England's bowlers, kind of one innings into the blooming series. It just felt a bit strange to me. But talking about the toss, Tony, I felt for Root a little. And I think one of the things for the I'm not sure Root's decision making in the test was always top notch. But I did worry. Well, it was a wonder, because going into the first test of the Ashes series, winning the toss, not batting, could send a signal. If I was in the Australian dressing room and Cummings comes back in and says, we're having a bat, lads, they won the toss and we're having a bat. If I'm the Australian bowling unit, I'm looking at each other going, they don't fancy us. They don't think they can score runs against us. And I would be really pumped up. So I think Root was looking to avoid that. And the old captain's adage of, if, you know, always have a think about bowling and then have a bat. But it was a green top, and it was a good. It was the best of the bowling
green
conditions.
Green top, but I heard, and he's a good knowledge of bowling conditions. Jonathan Agnew said it wasn't a difficult wicket. It wasn't a wicket where the ball seemed around and in the dew and skidded through and that sort of thing. It was, as would be expected on any test match in the first few hours, you have to apply yourself to get through. Mm-hmm. The other thing in his defense is that there is no doubt that the further the match went on, the more the wicket was becoming unreliable. Mm. And balls were darting through Lyon got more turn. And we'll discuss Leach in a moment. But the selection of Leach was twofold. One, it was to give economy to our bowl, a rest, give an economical rest for our fast-paced bowlers to come back refreshed and on a rotation series. And two, if the wicket broke up at the end of the day, to get wickets. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the crunches, wasn't it, day one, let's face it.
Day one. England's batting on day one. So, I mean, I really did feel for Rory Burns, I have to say. The build-up to a series, all of that, the travel, everything, you'd be looking forward to it, the training, the adrenaline going. And then he got, I thought it was I think the commentators were making a bit where he got a leg stump half volley. And Shane Warne spent about 20 minutes trying to convince everybody that it didn't swing, but it did. I mean, it swung a fair bit. And poor old Burns, he just shuffled outside of his off stump, exposed his leg stump, missed a shot that if it was three or four overs later and he had his eye in, he probably would have clipped off his pads for four, and he just missed it. Whether or not it was a deliberate plan by the Australians
and the reason I give it for this is that it was very noticeable, if you can remember, during the Indian tour and in the English summer, almost without exception, I can't think of an exception, even Joe Root, started taking middle and off and even off stump.
That's right, yeah.
And with that, you're automatically vulnerable to the leg stump. Mm-hmm. And add to that that Stark is a left-hander. Mm-hmm. Sharif Afridi had great success in the opening bowl in the opening overs, and he was a left-hander. Mm-hmm. And I think so. There was an element of, shall we say, suspicion that Burns could shuffle across,
move across too far. Yeah, yeah. Well, either way, I mean, poor guy. And he was in and he was out, and he got, what is it, they call it a diamond duck when you're out the very first ball of a Test match. Poor guy. I have to say, I thought Hamid. I mean, obviously, he was ended up within, before he'd even, his butterflies had settled, he was batting with Ben Stokes. So, I mean, the poor bloke was probably must have been like rabbit in the headlights. But he looked okay. There was a lot of talk, and we've discussed it with his technique, with his relatively low hands that he plays with, be a hindrance for him in Australia. But I thought in the first innings, and indeed for a large part of the second innings, I mean, until he got strangled down the leg side, I thought he looked okay. I mean, I thought he looked like he belonged there, and he looked like he was competing, and he looked like he may have run to
him. Yeah, I like you was a bit skeptical of his low hands, but I have to say, taking away the glamour innings of Milan and Root in the second innings, mm-hmm. I thought that he was the most impressive of all the batsmen. Mm-hmm. What he did have was soft hands, that when he got a thickish edge, it dropped short of the slip cordon. Mm-hmm. Whereas a batsman, even Joe Root, when he got one that reared a bit on him, his hands weren't soft enough and the ball flew. Pope was another who succumbed to that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Hamid, and he got right forward and right back.
Yeah.
And played some very nice attacking shots, and I thought it was certainly on a par with the two glamour innings.
I was pleased with them too. So yeah, obviously then Milan, I thought it was a bit of an uncharacteristic dismissal in the first innings, because Milan, for me, one of the reasons why he has done so well in Australia, he averages over 40, is he's good at dealing with the bounce.
Yes.
And it really seemed to me that the little bit of extra bounce that I think it was Hazelwood that got to him in the first innings was just undid him, and he played at something I think 9 times out of 10 he would leave alone, because he would read the bounce and say, at 0-1 I don't need to play at this, it wasn't 0-1, it was 11-1 or something at the time. But you know, and then the second innings did very well, and I think both he and Root, and obviously Root, you know, Root across his two innings averaged in the 40s. He got a very good ball, I thought, in the first innings as well. He got a terrific delivery. But they both batted really well, and again showed in the second innings how difficult it is, and particularly England batters find it, to restart in the morning.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the more difficult things to do when you're a batter, when you've batted for a fairly long period the day before, and you kind of go back out again, and you've all of that
Yeah. Settling. The very same happened to India in one of the tests in the summer, where they put on a great show in the afternoon, and the possibility was the test would be close. They came out in the second, and the next morning, and we rolled them over before lunch. There's a parallel there, but I have to say, I'll say this. The likes of Agnew and Finn, who I think incidentally is doing a very good job in, standing in for Vaughan's absence, and Nasser and Robert Key and Tufnell, they, whilst being critical, and I have to in his defense say that Agnew has been as critical after this test as I've ever heard him be, but they need to support and be measured in their criticism, because obviously they need to keep the England team on side so they can get access and they can get stories and they can get information about what's happening. We, as independent, if you like, pollsters or pundits, we don't need to be so soft. And I think whilst we have been supportive in the past, I think the time has come to say to the England batsmen, look, you've got to get with it. There's too many of you playing bad shots, wrong shots in the conditions, lack of concentration, forgetting this is a test match, thinking it's a 50-over knockabout. I mean, I give you one quote. Ollie Pope was interviewed and said, oh, the bouncy wickets have taken us by surprise. That, to my mind, was, let's be generous, naive to say the least. Everybody knows that the Australian wickets are bouncy. So what are the number of our batsmen who got out playing cuts, sweeps, paddles, and Robinson even got out playing a reverse sweep. That this is the number nine batsman trying to prolong the innings and get some stuff. And I mean, you know, it's just not good enough. They, I don't know. I've said in earlier casts that I'm beginning to look at Thorpe. I don't know if Thorpe is still out, is out in Australia. But this
I don't know. They've got a cast of thousands of supporting crew, haven't they?
But this is reminiscent of the way Thorpe played his cricket. And Cavalier cricket at the moment is in the first test of an Ashes is not the way. I mean, Stokes, some of the shots that Stokes played when he first came in. I mean, he got away with two or three. But to my mind, irresponsible. Do that if you're seeing the ball you've been in. Even if you've been in for a while and only got 20 or something, 25, you can then start maybe doing that if you're seeing the ball well. But how, when the wicket is, when the ball is bouncing, do not play cross-batted shots. And hooks and cuts and sweeps are cross-batted shots. Your margin for error when the bat is coming across the ball as opposed to playing down the ball, it's just...
Absolutely. It's a good point. Well, I mean, I agree with you about the England team needing to have a really good look at themselves. There are some players who are better than this in that dressing room, and they're not playing like it. And somebody who I would like to talk about a little, and I think he kind of often skates through without a lot of scrutiny, actually, is Ollie Pope. Now, England have invested a lot in Ollie Pope. They've selected him frequently. And I think they're not getting the return on that investment from him at the moment, I have to say. I had a look at his test career to date, and it was quite interesting because I think there's a couple of things stood out to me. So overall, he averages just over 31 in test cricket. Against Australia, New Zealand and India, he averages 25. Against everybody else, he averages 44 nearly. He's...
So is he a flat-track bully?
He's got seven hundreds and fifties. I think it's 100 and 650s. And he's got five of those against the rest, and he's only got two against Australia and New Zealand. So across his career, he gets a score of 50 plus in roughly one in five innings, in 19% of his innings. it's less than 10% of his innings against the very best. And the thing that really stood out for me was in his first knock, so batting in innings one or two in the game, so the first time England go out to bat, he's averaging, what is he averaging, 43. And that's where he scored all of his 50-plus scores. The second knock, and now often, sometimes the game state is different, but there's not a game state where these numbers are ever going to help England. No scores of over 50 and an average of just a shade over 14. He's I have to say, I'm you know, it was a departure from the past when England are investing in a young batter who they can see as being a stalwart for the future. They're giving him the 20-30 tests. But by this stage of his career, surely this was building towards this Ashes tour as one of them.
Oh yes.
He's now an experienced batter, and you want him to be there. So his average was got up to kind of, well, in his early career when he got some good runs fairly early on in his first, you know, first kind of handful of tests, it was up approaching 60. But once you started to get to somewhere around his 20th innings, or, you know, not including the not outs, his average was in the mid 30s. Well, it's gone down to the low 30s now, and it's kind of been trending down. But if you do a rolling, his rolling five innings average, and bearing in mind he got an 80 in at the Oval towards the end of the summer, his rolling five innings average at the moment is just 29, and it had gone down to the teens kind of in earlier in the year when in England's tour to India and so on. So for me, I think there's going to have to be some questions about Pope. I think you've got Bairstow in the squad. You've got Dan Lawrence in the squad. And also, you've got to say, somebody's scoring those runs. They're not really, you know, if England are playing effectively seven batters with Butler batting at seven, and I'd have to question whether that's enough of a contribution from Pope for them to continue doing that. So for me, I think there's a question mark about Pope. I'm not necessarily saying he should be thrown out of the team and do a knee jerk, but I think he needs to be on the watch list for somebody
he needs to be given a kick up the backside about his concentration powers, because he has it in him to make big scores.
Yeah, he does it for Surrey.
Yeah, he doesn't. And the way he got out in both innings, to my mind, was unnecessary. I mean, I he's not alone in that. The most of the batsmen, in my opinion, certainly, I mean, we lost, what did we lose? 8 wickets for 77 runs in the second innings, which to my mind is inexcusable. If the wicket was vicious, a Jim Laker 9 wickets, 10 wickets job, a Bob Willis bowling them out in the heat of the battle or something at the end of a test series in the famous Botham test, I could understand it. But no, this just was, in my opinion, rank bad batting. Mm-hmm. I heard on the stat, you a stato king, Steve, but Root has just established a record for an Englishman scoring tests, runs in a test in a year. And I think he scored, 1,500 runs in...
Yes, he scored over 1,500 runs, yeah. Mm.
The next best batsman in England, runs-wise, is 1,000 runs less.
Yeah, it's burned, isn't it? With 460 or something, yeah.
It's burned. I find that staggering, because I've got vast question marks over Burns. Mm-hmm. So I'm beginning to say to myself, are you being too hard, Tony, on Burns? Because what about the rest of the rubbish that's behind him, mm-hmm, who are supposed to be scoring runs?
Yeah, then I think beyond them, I think it's Pope who's got less than 400. Fewer than 400, I should say. So, yeah, that, absolutely. I think England have got, but ironically, though, when England were, you know, having a terrible time with the bat and going out to bat for the second time and wondering, you know, is this lot good enough? At that same point in Australia, Australia A had England A 13 for 3.
Yeah.
And you just had to think, my goodness me, you know, and there are some talented players in that side that were playing in that game, but goodness me, they're now batting to try to get something out of that game. I think they need another 320 to win stroke, you know, bat out the rest of the game. So if not these, then who? I mean, we've got Bairstow and Lawrence, neither of whom are without their flaws, but
and Crawley.
I have a feeling
I am of the opinion that on bouncy wickets, players who can hit the ball on the up are worthy of consideration. Mm-hmm. I think that Travis Head was a classic example of that. And we'll talk about him maybe, and the preparation, ironically, that he's had before this test, where he's played in five Sheffield Shield matches.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's turn to Australia batting and England in the field, focusing on England bowling. For me, going through the kind of report card for that test, I thought Wood was good and quite unlucky. I thought he bowled well and he bowled with pace.
He bowled good accurately.
Yeah, he did. He did well. So that was good. Robinson, I think also you can't really, apart from his reverse sweep, pin any blame for this test match on Robinson.
No, and he certainly put their left-handers under pressure.
Yeah. Wokes is okay. It wasn't the kind of performance I was hoping Wokes would now give for England in the test side. It was one of those ones that is the sort of slightly anonymous type performances with the ball that has seen Wokes being left out in the past. He didn't do anything particularly wrong. He wasn't terrible, but he didn't really grab his moments. He didn't didn't look like he was going to make much happen. And that was a bit of a concern.
The worry I have about Wokes is I think he's a good, honest trier and is not profligate as far as economy is concerned, but a bit like Jimmy Anderson, he needs conditions where the ball will swing. And this Kookaburra ball in this match only swung really in about the first eight overs. Mm-hmm. And Wokes was dangerous then. Mm-hmm. But he just does need a little bit more atmospherics, if you like.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe the day-night pink ball in Adelaide will suit him. I think that tends to move around a bit more.
I feel that.
And Stokes, for me, confirmed to me what I've felt about Stokes for a while, which is he's a moments bowler. You bring Stokes on, you give him a couple of overs, and you can probably tell within two or three overs if Stokes is in his, you know, quite nippy, but not particularly threatening, not terribly controlled, or if he's having one of his Stokes moments and he's going to get you two or three wickets. And I think what you do is you give Stokes two, three, four over bursts here and there through the day, and you bowl him a lot less probably than Root did in this test match. And if you're going to get a moment out of him, you keep him on. And if you're not, you get him off because he's going to start going at four or five and over.
On top of that, let's be cruel about this. He's not fit. It's not his fault that he's not fit. He is not fit. He actually was bowling almost medium pace some of the time. Yeah. His bowling was innocuous. Okay, he produced one brilliant ball, which was unfortunately a no ball that Warner survived. But his knee caused him problems. Okay, he made a great Superman show of being practicing and bowling and didn't have anything on the knee after he jarred it fielding. But look, in any sport, if you're out totally of cricket or of that sport for the length of months that he's been out, you can't, you're not Superman. You can't come back and do that in match one.
My notes, funny, Tony, my notes say, can't expect instant Superman. No. That's exactly the point. He will have a good series, I think. He will make a strong contribution.
Oh, he will.
It's very hard to rely on him.
He's got to work up to it.
Yeah. And that takes us to our final bowler, which was Leach. And again, my word here against Leach was gabatoir. It was the gabatoir in full effect, wasn't it, for Leach? Scarcely believable figures in the first innings. He got absolutely clearly the Australian plan was to attack him, try to knock him out of the attack and effectively disrupt England's plan to balance their attack through the rest of the series. And then maybe make them bowl, play what can often be a fairly samey pace attack, roughly the same with the exception of Wood. They all bowl roughly the same pace. They all need a little bit of help with the atmosphere to get the ball to do much. So I've had a look at Leach's test career as well, and you know, I think his overall career, he's averaging 31, economy rate of just over 3, which is interesting given that he went, takes a wicket every 60 balls, which is, it's kind of fine for a finger spinner. In the first innings, however, a first innings of a match, so either innings one or innings two, his average is almost 49, which is not good. His economy rate is not too bad still. It's still 3.3. And his strike rate goes up by 50%. It's now, he then takes a wicket every 90 balls. In the second knock, where you want him to bowl, and oftentimes spinners, particularly finger spinners, can come into their own, his average is 21, economy under 3, takes a wicket every 43 balls. So that's pretty good. His problem with this England side batting against this Australian attack is, if it keeps going like this, he's not going to get too many third and, you know, kind of fourth innings opportunities to bowl. He's not going to get much of an opportunity to bowl at the back end of the game, because Australia are only going to need to bat once. So, you know, I feel for him. He was on the end of a targeted attack. And also, I think Root probably didn't do him too many favours about when and how he tossed him the ball and who he was getting him to bowl to. And what became...
He set pretty aggressive fields for him.
He did, he did.
And even though he had certain men back, it's like with a right-hander to an off-spinner, it's very easy, or no, not very easy. It's easier for them, if they want to attack him, to hit through the ball, carrying the ball on the onside with the spin. Yeah. Australia had loads of left-handers, of which Travis Head was one, and so he effectively was an off-spinner to the left-hander, and Travis Head, obviously it was a plan, and they admitted it was a plan. They took him apart. Yeah. Now, I've also thought about Leach, and I've been an advocate for him. I thought he was, shall we say, unfairly criticised for his performances in India. But although the wickets in India were not slow, they're certainly nowhere near the pace of the wickets, bounce of the wickets that you've got in Australia. And he did okay in India, but you know, he hasn't played since then. I mean, he's another who's come in, and he was picked, and I advocated his selection because I thought he would do not as well, because I think Lyons in Australia is the best bowler in the world by a long, long way. And your stats that you have there show it. His idea was to close one end so that the pace bowlers could be rotated and be able to bowl in shorter bursts. And Wood particularly needs that. He should only be bowling in 4 or 5 over bursts, bowling at maximum speed.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's now a question mark in my mind, is Leach good enough? I don't know. The simple question to me is, we certainly haven't got anybody else. I mean, Don Best played for the Lions. He took 4 for 80 in 20 overs.
He took a bit of Humpty in the second innings, though.
Going to say, he took a load of stick in the second innings. He is not economical enough to do that job. He might take you a few wickets, but it's too expensive.
Yeah.
But again, Steve, we have to come back. If the batters don't get a score when they for the bowlers to bowl at, that puts enormous pressure on the bowlers.
Yeah.
And it all comes back down to day one.
It does. I want to just touch on, before we talk a little about the Australian team and moving on to thinking about the Adelaide test, which starts next week. England in the field, pretty sloppy catching, I felt. There were 2 or 3 opportunities that should have been taken, and indeed there was one run out where, you know, Warner was flopping about like a landed fish, and dropped his bat, and he was, you know, kind of trying to swim his way to the crease, and Hamid, instead of having the presence of mind, pretty much just to run at the stumps and you know, knock the stump out with the ball in his hand, he threw it and missed. I mean, I think Hamid's throwing is not very accurate, and again there was a very straightforward Burns drop. There was Root in a badly positioned slip position where an edge dropped in front of him. That I think would have been Labuschagne out very, very quickly in the first innings if he'd held that. Milan, I think, had a couple which were not straightforward chances at what, third slip, somewhere like that. But there was certainly one of them was really hard. One of them I felt was probably gettable because I think he kind of dived past it a bit. And all in all, you think, oh goodness me, if you're going to give up five or six wickets batting against, you know, against the Australians at the Gabba, you're giving yourself no chance. And I think I thought it was poor, I have to say. I thought the fielding was poor.
I would be less harsh than you, but certainly I would give the fielding just adequate. And I thought to myself, how is this? The fielding in the T20 World Cup was astounding, tremendous, fantastic. And then I realised, of course, that not one of those players really played in the T20 World Cup. So they probably haven't been working consciously on their fielding like the limited overs games has forced others to do. And certainly if you compare our fielding with some of the Australia, I mean, Hazelwood took two excellent,
very good catches. Yeah.
The Australian fielding was a league above ours. And I know it's a corny old expression, catches or win matches. But certainly if you're a sloppy fielding side, it is morale sapping. As far as a bowler is concerned. I mean, I saw Robinson when Burns dropped that catch in the first innings, he was absolutely distraught. You know, and nothing saps a bowler more. Robinson's a sturdy character and he came back from it. But I think you're right. I think, again, that's down to preparation. What have we been doing? I just...
Who knows?
Before we leave it, can I just ask, going back to Leach, we didn't discuss, and social media has had a lot to say on this. Would you have picked Broad instead of Leach?
Well, if you remember last show, we had our teams that we would select, and I would have selected Broad and Leach. Actually, I would have left out a batter. I would have left out Pope.
You're going to be all out for 50.
Yeah, we would have been all out for 50. Yeah, but no, I would have played Broad. I think I wasn't even particularly thinking about, you know, the Woody holds over Warner or anything in particular. I think that was a fairly shallow reason for picking. Yes, yes. I actually think we needed his competitive spirit, frankly.
Well, and also it appears that at the Gabba, his record against left-handers is excellent.
Yeah. I think actually Silverwood and Root perhaps are slightly mishandling the tail end of Anderson and Broad's careers, particularly Broad's careers. I think there's an element of not quite valuing what Broad brings to the team. I think they do have a slight problem with having them both in the team. They may well do for this day-night test that's coming up, but I think there are some obvious issues with the fact that neither of them are particularly great in the field. I mean, Jimmy's probably better than Broad, but both of them, you know, when you've got two bowlers of their longevity and that many overs in their legs, is it a bit more of a risk? We obviously don't see the data about their physical performances and things, and maybe there's some stuff in that. But I do slightly think that Silverwood, as a kind of main selector, seems to slightly underrate Broad. And I think he's making a mistake there. The other thing I'd have to say about England in the field, Tony, is very disappointing that not only did they lose the game, they also got docked 5 World Test Championship points as well. And that, frankly, was the difference for Australia.
For
the overrate. That they bowled too slowly. And
can you imagine if Broad had been playing instead of Leach? Can you imagine the overrate?
Not only would they have lost their match fees, they'd have been having to pay David Boone. They would have been having to pay even more than their match fees back. But the players lost their match fees, which is probably pretty harsh on some of them, but that's poor. I mean, you know, England don't seem to pay any mind to that, and they're going to have to get sharper in the field. And to me, it speaks of a lack of snap in the field, almost not exactly a lack of enthusiasm in the field, but a lack of seeing fielding as being an opportunity to control the game or to direct the game or to set the tone.
There are several Australian batters, and it was levelled at Butler, for instance, but there are the same criticism goes to some of the Australian batters. If you can manage to tie them down,
they get themselves out.
They get frustrated and they get their chances of getting themselves out increase dramatically.
The main
constituent for doing that is sharp fielding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bowling to a plan.
Yeah,
sharp fielding to back it up, and putting the pressure on. Yeah, using the pressure.
Cutting away outside off stump having sharp fielding on the offside. Fleetness of foot on the couple of fielders you got on the leg side.
Yeah. And so looking at the Australian batting, I mean, clearly, as we said going into the series, Warner, Labuschagne and Smith are all top class batters. Very, very good. We'd said that Harris, Green, Carey, Head had it kind of to prove a bit, or Head probably is suggesting he's a pretty good player. Though I think back and there have been players that have scored hundreds in the first test of a series before and haven't backed it up in later tests. So let's not quite put Head in the Marnus and Smith bracket just yet, but he did a very good job. Obviously, you can't knock 150. Still think Harris is looks short of being a test bat. Green as well, obviously, was if he's going to keep leaving balls like that, then he's not going to score many runs in this series. Yeah. And Carey is a good player, but of course is new to his career. So again, I didn't think I learned a lot about the Australian batting unit in this test. The players that are classy look classy. Head did a good job, but let's see if he backs it up. And the three that had no form at all still have not much form at all. It's the bowling, of course, which we know is classy. So turning to the next test, which starts on the 16th of December, so coming up very soon. Thinking first of all about the England team, Tony. I mean, I think let's deal with the Australian team first. Unless Warner and Hazelwood are not fit, then they will be picking the same team, I would imagine. And that's probably.
I don't think there's a shadow of doubt about that. No. Not one shadow of doubt. No. And I would go further. I'd say they'll pick the same team, win, lose or draw through most of the series.
They will. If they do need to replace Hazelwood, then I think it's Jay Richardson who's the... Yep. And he's a terrific bowler as well.
And he's on in form at the moment as well.
Very good. If Warner's not there, then that is a potential issue for them.
That is.
And I'm not quite sure where they will turn. Maybe Cameron Bancroft, somebody like that with a bit of experience.
It'd be interesting to see whether Warner's ribs are bruised or broken.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're broken, they're hardly going to say it because they want to keep it stunned.
Yeah.
But you've picked the almost the one hope we have. If they're broken and he can't play, then they possibly do have a problem at the top of the order.
Yeah.
And of course, if you have a problem at the top of the order, as we know only too well as loyal England supporters, that spreads down because the pressure is put on the lower order batsmen who come to crease a lot earlier.
And also it means that, you know, Marnus Labuschagne and Steve Smith aren't coming in after 30 or 40 overs, they're coming in after 30 or 40 balls.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference in terms of the opening bowling ability to swing the ball. It can be a much more testing conditions and so on. So, yeah, it has a big knock-on effect. I wrote an article.
Our bowlers would be fresher.
Yeah. I wrote an article about the top four in the World Test Championship. And I wrote an Australian one. And one of the things that was really noticeable about their performances in the World Test Championship is that Warner was terrific and everybody else was frankly bang average in terms of opening the batting for Australia. I think Will Pekoski looked the best bet, but he has issues with concussion and obviously can't be selected. So I think Australia will have a problem if Warner's not available, but otherwise the team selects itself. But England, for me, Tony, I probably stick with the same top seven for the next test. Tell them to go and fix it and then make hard decisions after Adelaide if we need to for the Boxing Day test.
You can't drop Burns after one test.
No.
To my mind, I think there are already unfortunate signs that his technique is not good enough for the Australian wickets. But let's give the guy... shall we say, one more chance.
Yeah.
Other than that, yes, I wouldn't change anything at the moment. As certainly some players have to be more responsible in their approach to batting. And I include Stokes in that. even though he got out to didn't get out to playing crash shots. He did play crash shots, which he did away with.
Played with fire a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So I agree with you. I would stick to the top seven. The only question now, and we both, I'm sure, agree that Jimmy Anderson will come in.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So then what do you do? You've got Leach going out. Are we agreeing with that?
Well, I think so, Tony. I had a look at spinners at Adelaide just to see if this is...
all those stats. To me, it's almost compulsive that he can't play.
Yeah. But so really the question for me is, England probably should leave Leach out. Is that okay in Adelaide? And since 2012, the top 14 spin bowling performances in an innings, 10 of them have been by Nathan Lyon and 4 of them have been by Ravi Ashwin. And so everybody else. So you have to go down to, I think, the 15th best performance before you get to Mark Craig from New Zealand, who got 3 for something or whatever. Nathan Lyon at Adelaide, and this is since 2012. Nathan Lyon averages 27 at Adelaide, economy of under 3, a wicket every 59 balls. All other spinners, if you exclude Lyon and Ashwin, who are in a different class, certainly a different class to anything England have got, averages 117.
100 per wicket, 117 wicket.
Economy of over 4 and a strike rate of a wicket every 165. You
need to go any further, Leach has dropped.
I think so. I think leaving Leach out will be fine.
Yes.
I had a look at these numbers as well to have a look to see how good Cummings, Stark, Hazelwood and Lyon are as a unit in Adelaide. It's not good reading. Collectively, since 2012, they average 22.65, economy rate of under 3, 2.77, and a wicket every 55 balls. Mm-hmm. So if England can get to 230, they're kind of doing okay in Adelaide. So yeah, I think leaving Leach out is the right thing to do. I think it's the right thing to do for Leach, frankly. And I don't think the England team will miss him. Root is an adequate spinner. He is better than an occasional spinner.
Underrated.
He's not a declaration bowler. He's a good spinner.
Yeah, I agree.
And if we really needed somebody else to bowl spin, then Milan can bowl some leg spin. He is much more occasional, but he can do it. And I think that's what England are going to have to rely on. I think Anderson comes in, and I think they clearly were resting and saving Anderson for this test.
Oh, I think there's not a shadow of doubt about that, and I agree with that. The only thing I would say with both Anderson and Broad, they played Dom Bess in the Lions match to give him a bit of match practice, and presumably let's see the conditions. Why didn't they do the same with Broad, certainly, and possibly Anderson, just and say, look, you can bowl 10 or 12 overs per innings, and you'll get your day in the field, and you'll build up your fitness. Yeah.
I don't know. There may be a COVID bubble thing with that. I don't know, but
it can't be, because Dom Bess has gone and done it.
Yeah, I suppose.
I can't see anything there.
Yeah, anyway, no, maybe not. Maybe not.
It's past history. They didn't do it.
Yeah.
So are you going to do? You're going to put Anderson in instead of Leach.
I am. And then actually, it's England didn't bowl terribly badly in that last test, apart from Leach, who obviously changed the tenor of it and allowed Head to get away and running. And of course, the injuries didn't help. And
I don't think it's been such a bad statistical bowling performance for many a test.
No.
90 runs in 11 innings, in 11 overs.
Yeah. No, it was something else, wasn't it? I think... I would like to see Broad play as well, but I'm not quite sure who I leave out. I don't think you can leave out Wood or Robinson off the back of their performances, which by default then means Wokes. And it may be that that's where England go, but then that puts Robinson batting at 8, and that might be a little high, but if it's what you have to do, Robinson at 8, Wood at 9, Broad 10, Anderson 11, it's a very long tail.
I can't leave out Wokes. I think his batting is too important. Even in both innings, I thought... Even in the second innings, he got out trying to protect the a tail ender at the and hot and Marshall the bowling, and he played well enough, I thought, in the first innings too. Admittedly, the pressure was slightly off when he came in lower down, but I think his batting is important.
Yeah.
He can get you 40, 50, even 60 runs, which could be vital. And at Adelaide, day, night, the ball will swing.
Yeah.
And he's almost on a par with Jimmy Anderson as far as swing bowling is concerned at the opening. So I can't leave him out.
Well, maybe the smart thing to do then is to leave Wood out. Not because he played badly, but because you play your swing bowlers saying, we're going to back that it's going to swing. Mark, we don't need you as much in this test to be a point of difference, because we don't need difference when we can turn it around, swing it around corners, and it keeps you fresher for later tests in the series.
I would have agreed with that until you shot me straight in the heart with your stats about Stark and Cummings and Hazelwood, who are faster bowlers and have got great stats. So I would, unfortunately, because I think he'll be so frustrated, I would still leave out Broad. I wouldn't pick Broad. No. I think that the other three bowlers held their, they bowled well in the first innings, I thought. So I would leave out Broad. That's only difference of opinion.
And I think it's a fairly hairline decision, I have to say, but maybe I'm just a Stuart Broad fan, who knows. But there we go. So I think England have got it all to do, certainly in the second test. Psychologically, it will be a difficult place to be in the England dressing room at the moment. Hopefully they'll be itching to get out there and put it right. That's certainly the sort of noise that Joe Root has made. I'd like to see Root be a bit smarter in the field this time. I think I'd like to see us look field with a bit more snap and a little bit more, try to be a little bit more assertive in the field and not let the game drift. And you've got to say to the top six, top seven batters, this is your opportunity to go and fix it. And if we don't, then Melbourne's going to look very different for the Boxing Day test.
I think, I know it's a corny expression, this is almost a must-win test.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If we draw it, we're still one down and there's three to play. But if we lose it, it's good night to the Ashes, because we've got to win the series to win back the Ashes. Mm-hmm. So a 2-2 draw is not good enough for us to win back the Ashes.
No.
We can come back with our heads held high and all that, but we won't come back with the Ashes.
No. There we go. So a must-win test. I think that probably takes us right the way through what we've got to say about it. There's lots to talk about, and fingers crossed that England can put in a slightly better performance next time. But you have to say, this Australian side, although I think we both were a little bit sniffy about their T20 team winning the World Cup, and we couldn't quite see how they managed that, I think this is an excellent team. This is a team that, if it wasn't for the docked points for the slow over rate, would have made the World Test Championship final.
And
so I think we are talking about, alongside India, the best test, the best test team in the world. They're looking very balanced.
A few players
with a little bit to prove, but that's not necessarily a bad thing if they.
And they've got one machine gun in their armory, and that is Nathan Lyon, who is in Australia by far and away the best spinner in the world.
Yeah.
And he is so important to them. Mm-hmm. They would have a problem. We talk about replacing Warner, but if anything was to happen to Lyon, then I do think that would dramatically change the approach.
They probably they'd probably play a leg spinner, I think, Zampa or O'Keefe or somebody like that, in order to have a point of difference. But it'd be a big difference.
Yeah, but I don't think they had got the experience or the accuracy of Lyon. But as you say, they are a very well balanced team. Mm-hmm. They're really existing, although the big tall fellow Green produced a corker to get rid of Joe Root, although I feel in my heart he could have left it. They're really operating on four bowlers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they can do that when they're all world class.
And they're picking four bowlers plus Stokes minimum.
Yeah. Aye, indeed. Well, there we go, folks. I think that wraps us up for this show. Let us know what you think. Would you bring in Jimmy and Stuart Broad, or would you just bring Jimmy in? I assume some of you may not bring Jimmy in at all, and you'd rather see the maybe the same 11. That would be amazing. Do you think we have to play Leach, or maybe put Bess in? I think that would probably be a bit of a tall order for Dominic Bess, but we've not discussed that. Let us know what you think. And don't forget to like and subscribe. And you can also follow us on Twitter. I try to chip in during the games when I can. It's at @SFTV_cricket. And look forward to interacting with you all there. And you can send me messages and stuff and tell me what you think. But it's been great to chat to you, Tony, this evening. I've really enjoyed that rundown of the test. It's been good stuff. And It's been a good show, and thank you very much, mate. And we look forward to seeing everybody next time on the Sports Fans TV Cricket Fan Show. Thank you.
Good night, guys.